The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We begin with Brian Flores, who's still in the running for the Saints and Houston Texans job, considering all the question marks surrounding Deshaun Watson's status with the double-digit lawsuits filed against him and how David Culley didn't really receive a fair shake as head coach. Should Flores really want that Texans job? And for that, we bring in our Dan Orlovsky. Where is he? Let me see him. Vegas Dan, how we doing? Dan, you going to see any shows while you're out there? Because I just want to let you know, John Legend is there, Carrie Underwood. I'm a fan of both.
Not going to see any shows, Molly. I actually have to work out here, so I'll be doing a lot of that.
Oh, that'll be worse. You working? Looks like you already got a tan, so
in
I don't
Vegas.
Know how much working you're doing.
I might gamble a little bit. I might throw a couple shekels down on a couple roulette wheels.
Okay, let's
always
go.
Hit on 16 World, so we'll see.
Whoa.
The Pro Bowl.
The Pro Bowl. I was like, why is he in Vegas?
No, I'm not vacationing, Stephen A. No.
All right. I'll just check.
Before we move on, though, I'm not buying that you are doing a little bit of pool time, but it's okay.
Go lose some money playing blackjack.
I'll just ask you for a Venmo then.
We know you're cheap. You can lose $100, though. You can lose $100.
He's right. I am.
That's right.
I am.
That's right.
I told my wife and my kids I'd gamble a little bit for them. But that's about it.
$100.
I'm sure your wife was really grateful. You'll gamble her money a little bit. Come on, Dan.
$20. $20 max.
Get it together. Enjoy the pool. Keep pretending to work. We'll be out there for the draft. Stephen A., your thoughts, though, on if Brian Flores should want that Texans job after what we just saw, what happened with David Culley, everything going on in the organization?
Hell no. He should want to avoid that job at all costs. Look, Nick Caserio, that was his first year as a GM. My question to him is, why didn't you fire yourself? Deshaun Watson couldn't play, okay? We all knew that. We all knew what situation David Culley was walking into. You hired him, and the only thing you did was make sure that he was going to get his money over the next 3 years, which I respect, but that's ownership. That ain't you. Nick Caserio sat up there, brought in David Culley, and then made him a scapegoat because of a job he didn't do. So to me, he should have fired himself before he even thought about firing David Culley. Everybody applauded the hard work, the commitment that those players put forth and how every single week they fought, they scratched, they clawed. That's what we were talking about when we talked about the Houston Texans. And we said it's a damn shame that David Culley has to deal with the situation because clearly they weren't the same without Deshaun Watson. I mean, you got Davis Mills and Tyrod Taylor and cats like that. I mean, David Mills, he started 11 of the games, went 2-9. We understand what the man was working with. And so when I look at it from that perspective, and you got a GM that clearly is not accepting accountability, your first year on the job, you knew how to find a scapegoat. I mean, damn, you didn't even wait until you acquired some experience to figure out how to get scapegoats. You just came out the womb finding scapegoats for your ineptitude, firing David Culley. Should have fired himself. So to me, why would I want to go and work for somebody like that? I'm sorry. I think there's a lot of question marks about ownership in Houston. I think there's a lot of question marks about that GM. And if I'm Brian Flores, if I'm a first-year guy, Dan, that never had a job, then I'm going to do what David Culley did and take it because it's an opportunity of a lifetime. If I'm somebody like Brian Flores, who's been a head coach in the league for 3 years, had a winning record the last two, universally respected as a head coach, I'm sorry. There are better opportunities than the Houston Texans for Brian Flores to entertain.
Yeah, so I would disagree. I think he should take the job if it's offered to him or at least want that job. But two caveats to what I say, Stephen A., because you bring up a lot of good points. But number one, there's only 32 of these jobs in the world. These still are NFL head coaching jobs. And I know a lot has been brought to the light, certainly over the past couple of years and obviously by Brian Flores recently. But there's only 32 of them. That is still a really, really important thing to point out. And we don't know if it's the only opportunity that he might have when it comes to being a head coach this year. You know, is it Houston and nobody else as an option for him? Because if that's the case, then I still say yes. I understand that they have, you know, some history organizationally that we all sit there and go, what the heck are you doing as an organization? But the reality is this. They went through their hardest year when it comes to the organization with free agency's ability to spend and draft picks. David Culley, in many ways, bore that burden. You know, he fell on the sword because now they have draft capital back and they have free agency capital back, so they can build a football team again. Deshaun Watson, I would assume, it seems, is likely to be traded. That is only going to bring more assets into your organization. And so I think that, like, the reality of, okay, there's only 32 head coaching jobs. You just filed this lawsuit courageously. If you can do that while also being able to do the thing that you love to do, coaching, and this gives you that opportunity, maybe not perfect and maybe not ideal. And honestly, Stephen A., maybe not what you deserve, but it's still a head coaching job. And my question, I guess, back to you would be this. You know, I think so much has been brought to the light when it comes to, and I've talked with Marcus Spears so much about this and learned so much of representation. Mm-hmm. Don't you think it's important for more African-American, black head coaches to be head coaches in the NFL? So if this is the opportunity that can be given to him in this hiring cycle, I would say, isn't it important for him to say yes and get back on that head coaching journey?
No, not in this case. And let me explain why. Profoundly respect your position, Dan Orlovsky. I see exactly where you're coming from. There's no problem with your thinking. It makes total sense. But I'm going to give you what I'm going to personally term the black perspective in this regard.
Sure.
That's a losing situation. You departed from Miami winning football games. You're universally respected because of the level of production you showcase. There are numerous assistants, former assistants for Bill Belichick that we can point to respectfully that didn't have that luxury. Even though Bill O'Brien had a winning record a lot of times, we didn't like the job that he did in Houston. You trade DeAndre Hopkins. It seemed like your personal feelings got in the mix, even though you said it was a contract issue and some of the other moves that you made that were highly questionable before you ended up having to depart and getting saved by Nick Saban to be his offensive coordinator at Alabama. And now you're back in the mix as a potential head coaching candidate somewhere down the line. We look at the Romeo Crennels of the world, the Charlie Weisses of the world, Josh McDaniels when he was in Denver, along with various others. And there's some, we respect all of these people. But there were some question marks as to what they were able to accomplish as head coaches, okay? In Brian Flores' case, he goes to Miami after struggling that first year. Even with Tua Tagovailoa as his quarterback, he won 10 games his second year. This year, he ended up winning like 7 or 8 straight after a 1-7 start and ended up going 9-8 and was in the playoff picture until pretty much the last week of the season or the second to last week, the penultimate week of the season. So when we take that into consideration, Dan Orlovsky, you take a job, you don't have a quarterback, you take a job with an organization that's 4-13, you don't have a quarterback. You don't know if you're going to have a quarterback that you can rely upon. You don't know if you can trust the GM in Nick Caserio, who's already shown his willingness to find a scapegoat instead of firing himself. Okay? Ownership with the McNairs has been questionable, to say the least. Yep. You go there and you potentially tarnish what you built in terms of your reputation in Miami. That would be the hesitancy, because then they're going to point to the record instead of the conditions. And that's one of the things black coaches have been complaining about, the positions you put them in. Yeah. It ain't quite asking the dude to throw games and get a $100,000 paycheck, but it ain't far off when you look at how dismal the situation is in Houston.
Dan, you know what I sort of compare it to from an athlete's perspective? When we talk about success for an athlete, much of that is dependent on where they're drafted, right? The situation.
Absolutely.
And that determines their success. And I kind of look at this in the same way. This would not necessarily be a position to succeed. So you could argue it could do more harm.
And that's kind of why I caveated it, Mally, with, like, if this is the only option. You know, if he's got multiple other options or he feels good with potentially the New Orleans job or something like that, then that point is valid. But if he wants to be back in coaching, if Brian Flores wants to be a head coach again in the NFL, and the Houston Texans are the only organization, at least this year, that is going to offer him a job, I get it with the McNair family. Ever since Mr. McNair has passed away, that ownership has faltered. But he also knows Nick Cassero, the general manager, from their time together in New England. He may trust him more than other people do. I don't know. And so I think that, you know, coming off of what happened this past week and him filing that lawsuit and him saying in his own words, I understand that I'm putting my ability to be a head coach or the likelihood of being a head coach in the NFL again at risk. If he wants it and they offer it to him and he's good, I think he's good enough. I think that this is an opportunity for him to get back and be a head coach again in the NFL.
Yeah, that's fair. Strong points on both sides. All right, Vegas Dan will be back with us. Again, he's going to gamble a little bit for his
Vegas Dan.
For,
I like that.
For
I
his
like
family.
Do I, hit on 16 or do kids. I sit? Do I sit on 16? Do I hit or do I pass?
Hit. And by the way, like I said, you hit, but let's also understand this. The $20 is ridiculous. That's $25 is one
Stephen
chip. Okay?
I got four kids, man.
Listen, man, $100, man. You making some money, man. I mean, ESPN's paying you well. Come on now, stop it. You can afford $100 at the blackjack table. Just
Marcus said he's going to teach me how to play craps today. So
Dan, let me give you.
Yeah, that is a game Marcus would know how to teach.
Let me give you some Molly Karam advice here. I've never bet a dollar in my life, Dan. You only bet on yourself, okay? We're just going to leave the segment.
Put it on a T-shirt.
There we go.
Put it on a T-shirt.
You know she's lying.
I can already see his side eyes, and I'm absolutely not lying. Bet on yourself only.
You never bet ever. Okay.
Honest to God.
Okay.
I have never bet a dollar.
Okay. That's very corny. That's very corny on your part.
Why is that corny on my part?
You're going to go to Vegas and never bet. My mother played the slot machine for crying out loud. And she never gambled. My mother played the slot machine.
I have my money in my pocket. That's not thrilling to me. Like drinking and gambling, that doesn't do it for me.
All right.
Shopping. Now that does.
Not drinking. I didn't say drinking.
Shopping.
I didn't say drinking. There's nothing wrong with $100 at the blackjack table.
There we go. All right.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jim Harbaugh is a Michigan man for the long haul. That's what he told the school after a 9-hour interview with the Vikings yesterday that ended with no offer from the team. Many thought Harbaugh to the Vikes was a lock, and apparently so did he. Here's our Vikings reporter, Courtney Cronin, on what went wrong.
I think that there was this assumption from his side of things that did not line up with what the Vikings were intending Wednesday to be. And it was a real job interview. It was the exact same format, the same schedule, the same people that he would meet with that they did on Tuesday for Giants defensive coordinator Patrick Graham. So, you know, Harbaugh came in, according to sources I've talked to, you know, the last 24 hours, you know, his intention was, I'm going there to sign a contract. And that just, like, was not the case. This was a real job interview where he had to sell the team on him being the best fit for the job. And the fact is, it just did not, you know, both sides did not agree eye to eye on kind of what the entire thing was. And that's why he left Minnesota on Wednesday without an offer.
Okay, Dan. So yesterday, Schefter tweeted that Michigan was elated when they heard that Harbaugh was returning. But you know that quote, Dan, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. Sometimes it's greener where you water it. So I don't know if I'm being petty, Dan, but should Michigan be elated?
Did you take that from Aaron Rodgers? Did you steal that from Aaron?
No. Why? He said that.
Oh, okay. He said it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, honestly, I didn't. But I like that one. But with that being said, you get the sentiment of the quote. So should Michigan be elated that Harbaugh's staying?
Yes, absolutely. Michigan, during the Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke era, in between Lloyd Carr, essentially, and where Harbaugh is now, was 24-32 in Big Ten play. 24-32. Harbaugh has absolutely solidified Michigan as being back to one of the premier top 10 football programs in college football. And I'm not taking shots at these other programs, but he did save them from becoming a team like or institution like a Nebraska that is trying to find their footing again, or Texas that is trying to find their footing again, or a Miami that is trying to find their footing again. I know Jim Harbaugh is not Dabo Swinney when it comes to the wins, or Nick Saban when it comes to the wins, or even Ryan Day when it comes to the wins. But they are a very good football team. He's been there for 7 years, Molly. 7 years. And I'm not going to count this two seasons ago, so essentially the 2020 COVID season. In that 6 years, outside of that 1 year, his wins are 10 wins, 10 wins, 8 wins, 10 wins, 9 wins, and 12 wins. I mean, the guy, all he does is win 10 games a year. And I understand the standard of Michigan is incredibly high, but we've seen what Michigan was without him. And people are going to point to, well, he did this on National Signing Day. If you listen to the college football people who are attached to that, it really wasn't that big a deal because most of their class, or the great majority of their class, was already locked in. So if you're Michigan, you're sitting there going, we've got the guy that we think has proven to have us be a consistent 10-win football team, and coming off of the college football playoff appearance last year gives them the chance to be again in the conversation for a national champion.
You know what? We don't disagree there. I thought, to me, it's a non-story. The story is this, is if he had left, because
I agree.
Leaving Michigan is a big deal, particularly when the first 6 years, as good as your record was, because you ultimately have a 61-24 record, which is not shabby. The bottom line is when before this year, he had to take a pay cut from $8 million to $4 million. His job was on the line. That's why he took the pay cut and changed the staff. And what does he do? He finally beats Ohio State and he gets to the college football playoffs, you know, winning the Big Ten championship along the way. And so they had a very, very successful season. Had he left Michigan after that, that would have been a big, big story. The fact that he didn't get the Vikings job, first of all, when have the Vikings been relevant? They haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1976. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Kirk Cousins is their quarterback. Number three, they just find reasons for things not to happen for them, even though they've been in a couple of conference championship games. Here's the story for me, Dan, and I brought this up in the first hour, and I'm going to bring it up to you again because I'm wondering how you feel. We talked about Brian Flores. We talked about some of the things he has to deal with. We talked about some of the things, obviously, his allegations against three NFL teams in the National Football League, what they brought to light, and the plight of African-American coaches in the National Football League. I'm looking at the dude that was competing with Jim Harbaugh for the Vikings job, Kevin O'Connell. And if he's watching, this is no shade on him. You end up getting the Vikings job, congratulations. You're having a successful year. You're doing a good job for Sean McVay. Props to you. It's no knock against him. But I'm noticing this little tree, Dan Orlovsky. See, the Washington, at the time, the Washington Redskins, before they became the Washington football team, before they became the Washington Commanders, okay? Before all of that happened, all right? Or while Jay Gruden was the quarterback. I'm sorry, was the head coach. Who did he have on the staff? And Sean McVay.
LaFleur.
LaFleur. Kyle Shanahan, and all of this other stuff, Matt LaFleur, yes, him, Mr. 27th-ranked offensive coordinator in Tennessee before he gets to coach Aaron Rodgers, and then everybody's acting like he's so phenomenal. We'll see how much love he gets once Love throwing the football for him instead of Rodgers, but that's a different subject for another day. Bottom line is he won 13 games each year. He's been a head coach in the National Football League. He deserves our respect in all seriousness. But I'm noticing this tree is Sean McVay. It's LaFleur, it's Kyle Shanahan, Kevin O'Connell. If he gets the Vikings job, all of these. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm wondering when some brothers are going to be sprinkled in there. You know, I mean, because when I look at the NFL, when I look at NFL Live, I see Dan Orlovsky and I see my man Swagoo. Of course, the lovely Mina Kimes and the wonderful Laura Rutledge, okay? But I see Dan Orlovsky and Swagoo. I look at ESPN, we see me. We see me, we see you, we see Ryan Clark, we see Damian Woody, all this stuff. Every time I see these clicks,
that, you know, these trees that are developing with the branches, the tentacles that reach out and blesses the NFL with their presence. No wonder we've got just one black coach in 2022, because all of these trees, all of these cliques that have developed. I mean, you got brothers on your staff. Ain't any of them your friends? How come none of them are included in these trees? That's what stood out to me, that we sitting here talking about Kevin O'Connell. And, and I hope he, and listen, God bless him. He's a talent. And I hope he gets a job one day. But I'm just wondering about stuff like that when clearly you got coaches that have paid their dues who happen to be black that never get mentioned.
No, I think it's a good point, Stephen A. So when the news broke yesterday of Kevin O'Connell being the likely candidate that's going to get hired, I think, from Graziano, I was on the plane out to Vegas, and I thought, okay, my immediate mind was, well, who's he going to take with him to Minnesota to be his offensive coordinator? And the immediate thought was, well, the offensive coordinator for the University of Kentucky, Liam Cohen, because Liam Cohen comes from the Los Angeles Rams. So I was like, okay, Liam Cohen's going to go there. Then who's going to replace Kevin O'Connell? And I thought, well, maybe Liam Cohen will go to the Rams then. And then Steve Wyche said in a tweet to me, like, hey, Thomas Brown, who's the running backs coach out in for the Los Angeles Rams, who running back, long time at Georgia, he could be a guy that I'm hopeful enters into that offensive coordinator role that not only will then give him this springboard opportunity to be a head coach, but also comes from that type of tree, that question that you're asking. So I think Thomas Brown is a name that it's super, super important in all these kind of revolving pieces that are going on with these head coaching things. And then I also say this, Stephen, I know I love the Shanahan tree more than anybody in the world, right? I love it. I also would say this, if I was, because I thought Justin Fields should be in that tree. If I were the Chicago Bears and Matt Eberflus, I would very much so consider hiring Pep Hamilton as my offensive coordinator. Yep. He's got a little bit of experience in that tree.
They had an Indy background as well years ago. Did a great job.
And 2 years ago when Justin Herbert won Rookie of the Year with big, powerful, big arm, strong, athletic guy, Pep Hamilton was part of that kind of, you know, that quarterback room, and I would bring him over to the Chicago Bears to be my offensive coordinator. I think this is a real conversation, right? This is a real conversation that no one should be running from having.
Absolutely. By the way, I'm going to leave it at that because all your points were profound. And one of the other profound things you mentioned was Steve Wyche.
I love Steve Wyche.
Steve Wyche from the NFL Network. Let me tell you something right now. That's been my brother for many, many years. I love him. He does an outstanding job reporting for the NFL Network. Yeah. And he is a dear friend who I love very, very much. He's a good man.
People. Me too.
Doing a great job. I've known him for over 20 years now. I miss that brother. I got to make sure I see
him. His wife, his sons. Yes. He has a great family.
One of the best people you'll ever meet in your life.
He's a class act and obviously a pro's pro.
Yeah.
I just want to reiterate this one more time. Of the five head coaching hires thus far this season, I'm going to include Connell in this. All are white and only one has head coaching experience, and that would be Josh McDaniels. Yeah. Dan, Vegas Dan, we have to say bye to you. I think your tea time or your pool chair is ready
gamble.
For you.
Go gamble. $100.
Go pretend to work.
$100.
Go pretend to work on NFL Live.
By the way,
is the whole NFL Live crew out there with you?
Yeah, we're out here for the next 2 days.
By the way, something else very, very important.
What?
The one thing that I have to critique Steve Wyche about is a little bit too much gray.
He has a full head of hair.
I like when you embrace the gray.
I'm just saying.
Hold on.
Well, Steve Wyche used to once tease me. Steve Wyche, what's up with the gray? I'm seeing excessive gray.
Hold up.
That's all I'm saying.
Wyche has a baby face, though.
He does. The baby face is
Stephen A. Molly, I'm going to put $100 down for each of you guys, black or red.
Do that.
You know what?
Black.
You know
black.
What?
Always been on black.
Dan.
Always bet on black, Elvis.
Dan,
you don't know that?
Dan, for me, bet on yourself and keep the 100 in your pocket.
Come on, Molly. Just give me a color.
It's about black.
I'm not giving you a color.
Black. You're going to walk away with an extra $100.
Why would I throw away my money?
No, how about winning?
Because I might win.
How about winning?
Get out of here.
How about winning?
You know the odds.
Put 100 down for Wifey, too.
It's not about odds. That's
okay.
Do that. Do that.
Let me give you better advice. Just go buy her a purse. She doesn't want the $100 on black.
You can only carry one purse at a time. You can only carry one purse at a time.
Thank you.
Okay.
So especially somebody as cheap as you. You ain't going to have any money in it. So why is the purse so important?
Excuse me. First of all, I'm not cheap. I'm very generous. And second of all, you could get the matching shoes.
You cheat with yourself.
Oh, my God.
You don't want to spend money on yourself. You just proved it on national television.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The Sixers and Ben Simmons continue their stalemate. Here's Ramona Shelburne yesterday on NBA Today.
He's a distraction at this point. The team is game out of first. They're doing well. He said he's not going to play there. He's not mentally ready to play there. And what's the point of having him go through a shoot-around or a film session or a practice? He's not going to. And so there's not really a plan to get him back on the court with the Sixers. They say they're open to it. But what do they want him back? Do they actually – because if they do, there's no plan for him to actually get back. Mm. And on Ben's side, he's been pretty consistent in saying he didn't want to play for Philly.
Right.
And he's not mentally ready to get back on the court at all to work his way back through practice or shoot around or however you would do it. And so there is no plan to get him back on the court. And so what are we doing here?
Okay, my girl Chinee is back. Ramona Shelburne has a great deep dive on .com right now on the Ben Simmons 76ers saga. Meanwhile, the Sixers have won 5 out of their last 6, and they are in serious contention for the 1 seed. All right, Stephen, I'll start with you. Are the Sixers making a mistake by not trading Ben Simmons?
I believe they are, and I've stated that for a long time. I think Daryl Morey usually pulls the trigger. Ownership, my belief was they're probably holding him back, knowing them the way that I do. But in the same breath, I've also heard from a lot of people that's not the case. They're not holding Daryl Morey back at all. He's determined to make sure he gets equitable compensation for Ben Simmons, which I believe he could do. I believe he should have done this summer, to be quite honest with you. And I think that Daryl Morey, to some degree, is blowing this. Here's the deal with Ben Simmons. It is a catastrophe what this situation is. It is bad for the NBA. And even though Rich Paul is not at fault because he just has to do what his client insists on doing, there are others who that would say agents got to have some control over your clients to some degree because of what's in the best interest of business. The owners are coming for the NBA players. I'm telling you what I know. They're not playing. And the reason why they're not playing is that you can get away with a lot of things, Janae. But getting paid for not playing on purpose is something that a lot of people are going to hold you accountable for. Now, we know not to minimize the importance of mental illness. We get all of that. We all understand that. Why I bring it up with cynicism is that we have to understand that there's a lot of people that don't believe Ben Simmons. It's not that they're saying mental illness is not an important thing. They're not trying to minimize the significance or the importance of that in any way. What they're saying is they don't believe he's telling the truth, that the second he got traded, he'd be ready to play, that the same guy that isn't ready to play mentally is fighting them to make sure he gets all his money. That kind of stuff, you're going to pay. And in the end, the last thing I'm going to say is this. The biggest reason they should move. I got Joel Embiid. I'll talk about him with MVP and later on. But Joel Embiid is having a monster year, and it's being wasted. And we all know he ain't the most durable dude in the world. He usually gets hurt. And now that hasn't happened. You're going to waste away a championship opportunity to prove a point. That's where I'm at.
I know a lot of people hear about this championship run that they can make right now, but I think we need to reframe it as like a championship window. Because I know Philly, that's your stomping grounds, right? That's where you have your ear to the ground, and you know all the gossip, you know all the tea. Mm-hmm. So
that's
understand.
Most cities, but I hear what you said.
Oh, is that all? Yeah, you're right. That's definitely LA too. Okay, that's definitely we like you here in Connecticut. I guess maybe there's gossip out there, right, Molly?
There ain't no NBA team out there. We don't care about that. Go ahead.
But when you think of the situation, I understand that the owners are like, we want our players to play because they're making millions. But I do think it has to be put into context that he's already lost out on $19 million. And he's made about 60, so that's about a third of his potential earnings. To me, if you're willing to lose that much money, something might be real in your life. And the city of Philly, like, they're done with the process. Like, they don't want to be patient anymore.
And
I get that. And they have the right, you know, person in charge, Daryl Morey, to make a potential trade. But if he's not making one, and as you mentioned, he's inclined to pull the trigger, maybe there's a reason. The only team that really came up the last 2 weeks as a real potential was the Sacramento Kings. Daryl Morey said that he wanted an all-NBA player in return for Ben Simmons. He probably won't get that.
Right. All right, not now, because Ben Simmons is hurting his own marketability to get traded.
I think that we knew when Ben Simmons played his final game in Philly that that was likely going to be his final game if he had his way. Right? Like, his mindset to enter the team again, even though the team was like, oh, we want you back. Like, we knew that it was not likely. He was sticking to his guns
after the
there.
Loss to Atlanta.
Exactly. So, given that circumstance, now you look, all right, you're not getting an all-NBA player. Mm-hmm. The player or the players that you can get, the assets, they better be a home run for you. And I think that's exactly, they better be a home run.
Let me say this to you. First of all, let's dissect, because I know you know your basketball. Okay? Okay? Let's define home run in the place, in the, you know, the situation involving Ben Simmons. Defensively, all world. He was my defensive player of the year last year. He got my vote. Lethal.
Yeah.
Offensively, that's a different matter. Now, I understand he's 6'10", athletic, nasty ball handling skills, high basketball IQ. But he couldn't shoot to save his life. And on top of all of that, when you combine that with the fact that we've now learned he gets a bit petrified in certain moments, that further dilutes his offensive prowess. So now when we talk about finding somebody, well, let's just say hypothetically, okay? If I worked out a three-team deal and I got a C.J. McCollum and I got a Buddy Hield, not to say that's the case because I know better, but what I'm saying to you is
not all NBA, hypothetically, but yeah, valuable.
Right? Well, guess what? Between the both of those brothers, I'm significantly better offensively, and I make up for what I lack defensively because them brothers can put up buckets. So this mentality that I got to get an all-world, all-star play if I'm Daryl Morey, I think is a bit misguided.
I think he's just trying to raise the value by saying
he
needs
but he made a mistake. Yeah. He should have did it over the summer and then made sure you made a move because the – and by the way, the $19 million that you talk about, that's why I brought that up. Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons is not thoroughly convinced, and his team is not thoroughly convinced. They lost that money. They're fighting to get that money. So he doesn't. So he didn't take the L. You see what I'm saying? His whole point is, I'm fighting for it. So you got the nerve. Think about this for a second. Think about this.
Fight for money while you're not playing.
Yes. On purpose. I haven't played, but I want my money.
Once I have a contract and I have, you know, a long-term relationship with you, I'm still fighting for my contract whether I play or not.
Whoa. You. Don't ever put yourself in that equation because you show up to work. See, the point that I'm trying to make is you are going to have that attitude. I'm going to have that attitude. You're going to have that attitude. Huh, sprinting to work the other day, sweating on the air and all of this other stuff. You're going to have that attitude. You know why? Because we show up to work.
Yeah, I go to work and then to practice.
When I went off on Kyrie, he talked about no damn vaccine. I said, yo, man, you got to show up to work. Showstopper, box office, people walking through the turnstiles, they standing in tunnels, and you ain't there.
Look, good,
that's the problem.
Good agenting and good representation means you fight for your money even if you're not available, right? So I feel like they're doing their due diligence.
I'm not faulting the representation.
Yeah.
No, of course not. The representation is doing what they're supposed to do.
Not many people can still be in this situation if you don't have that representation.
We can debate how Rich Paul has elected to handle it, but at the end of the day, he's doing the right thing, fight for his client. What I'm saying is, you the player, you know you ain't working, and you fighting for your money on purpose.
He is working out, and I do believe he's working out.
Hold it.
Okay,
you didn't just say that. You didn't just say that.
Look, let me tell you, he's rested. I think he's going to make an effort to play if he were to be traded.
Oh my God.
If he were traded, he's trying to stay ready right now. I mean, the team he refuses to play for. Let's get back to this, Stephen A. The reality is the only team that we really heard that removed themselves were the Kings. And even if you add a three-team trade, I'm not sure if you're going to get, even if it's not all NBA, players that will be able to position Joel Embiid right now for a championship versus waiting to the offseason.
You already lost me. Because what you just said, did you know that if you get on the Peloton and break a sweat and stuff like that, and you get on the treadmill and you break a sweat, it can actually help your lungs better, which helps your voice and all that stuff. So guess what, Shanae? Guess what, Shanae? All right, ESPN. I don't need to show up my first day. Let me go in the gym. Let me work out. Let me get
I'm
a break
just
a sweat.
Saying, if
get
he were
going.
To be
so,
traded,
so my voice is all
if
right.
If he were to be that, traded, that, he would.
Working.
If he were to be traded, he'd make an effort to play for the new team. He's not going
hold
to
hold
play
on.
For the team
time
that
out,
you knew
time out.
He closed the door
so,
on.
So in other words, you're admitting and I know you know this, you're admitting here on national TV.
Now he's available. He wants to
the
play.
The second he got traded, he'd be ready to play, which means he ain't playing for the Sixers on purpose. Then what you fighting with them about your money for?
You're fighting because that's what you're obligated through your contract, and you have this, but also, you know, you have these extenuating circumstances where we don't know the real day-to-day as to why he's really out, per se.
And you said if he wants somewhere else, he'd be playing.
I'm not going to dismiss the fact that you never know situationally why he's not playing.
I agree with that.
You know,
but you just said
they're trying to protect the athlete from themselves. He's creating an environment. Yeah.
All due respect, that is not what Janae Ogumake said. What she said was, if he got traded, he would play. So my point is, you're not playing for the Sixers on purpose.
And
you're saying he's got a contract. You got a contract to play.
Maybe part of his issues that he's trying to work through are because this environment is not best for him right now. You know what I mean? And that's a reality that athletes have to face a lot.
Hold on. So how was it good?
He's not the norm.
How was the environment? Because as a guy that worked in Philadelphia for 17 years, I would know about the Wells Fargo Center.
Yeah.
I lived there.
I love Philly.
Okay.
I'm a fan of him.
He's saying he'll be ready to go elsewhere, but in Philadelphia, we have to give him grace.
Come on.
Because
you
of the personal situation.
All of those years under those conditions. All of a sudden.
Yeah, but that's why I said, the last game, that condition could not be repaired.
Commercial break. Okay. Saved by the Bell was before your time.
No, I love that.
That was a good show.
Yeah, you
just helped the owners.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Ain't as easy as people assume.
Mm-hmm. Really, Stephen A? Let's get to the MVP race in the NBA. Caesars Sportsbook currently lists Philly big man Joel Embiid as its favorite for MVP. However, reigning MVP Nikola Jokic isn't too far behind. Giannis, Steph, and Ja Rand out the top five of the shortest odds to win MVP. But those are just odds, right? So I want to hear the top candidates from Stephen Naismith himself. I did not write that.
Someone else wrote it. Say it if it's true. I'm giving it to you right now. Now remember, here's the deal. The list is fluid, okay? It's fluid, ladies. It's fluid. That's just for right now, and it ain't just based on numbers. Keep that in mind as well. We're going to go to the top five of my MVP candidates right now as we speak this season in the NBA. Give me number five on the list, please, right now. Give it to me. Devin Booker. I'm sick and tired, including myself, not giving this brother the love that he deserves, averaging nearly 29 points per game since January 1st, and the Suns are 14-1 over that stretch. Best record in basketball. He's got a whole lot to do with that as well. Monty Williams, good Lord have mercy, what a coach this man is. Mm-hmm. Let's go to number four on the list, please. Give it to me right now. Give it to me. Nikola Jokic.
Wow.
Why am I putting him up there? Because Denver is still in the mix. Listen, Jokic averaging like 25 and 13. More importantly, no Jamal Murray, all right? No Michael Porter Jr. He's in Mile High City in the altitude, deal with all that nonsense, and still doing his thing. I got to give love where it's due. I was thinking about Giannis, but that's what I got to go with. Jokic, give me number three on the list, please. Give it to me right here. CP3.
Whoa, two sons.
Two members of the Phoenix Suns, averaging an NBA best 10.4 assists per game this season. They're the best team in basketball. Who doesn't see the leadership? What do we talk about? When we talk about greatness for people, we talk about leadership and floor generalship. When we lament what we're not getting from the point guard spot, we defer to CP3. Not what he did, what he's doing at age 36, playing like the best point guard in basketball. It's unreal. The Suns with Bridges, with DeAndre Ayton, and the rest of those crew. What would they be without CP3? It damn sure wouldn't be the best team in the NBA, I'll tell you that much. I got two members of the Phoenix Suns in my top five MVP race. Give me number two on the list, please. Put it up here right now. Ja Morant. Ladies and gentlemen, a superstar has arrived in Memphis,
And it ain't Elvis. It ain't Elvis. It's this dude, Ja Morant. He is something special. And we know what he brings. One of four players, listen, one of four players this season averaging at least 25 points per game, six assists and six rebounds, alongside LeBron, Jokic, and Luka. We know what Ja Morant brings to the table. But when we think about Bane, when we think about Jackson, when we think about Dylan Brooks, when we think about all of these brothers, who do we think about first? It's Ja Morant, because he's the closer and he's the inspirational figure that's galvanized this franchise and elevated them into the mind's eye of the basketball world the globe over. A superstar is in Memphis, damn it, and it ain't Elvis. It's Ja Morant. He ain't number one on the list, though. This is number one right here. The one and only, Joel Embiid. What this guy is doing in the face of all of the shenanigans that we're witnessing with Ben Simmons, looking at the way this guy has played, he is my top MVP candidate with what he is doing. There is no question about that. I know Giannis is big time with the big numbers. Milwaukee, to me, is just strolling along because they ain't about the awards. They're about the chip. They're the reigning defending champions. He's going to get his numbers in his sleep. We understand that. But Milwaukee doesn't look like Milwaukee yet. They'll look better as the season progresses. And by the time the season is over, who knows? Giannis might be number one again. But right now, I'm going with this top five right here.
I know this list is fluid.
It's fluid.
But I am a little surprised again that Giannis is not on there because if you look at numbers, Jokic, I mean, I'm glad he made the list.
Yo, Giannis got better numbers.
Yeah, he does have better numbers. Right. But if Jokic is on the list, Giannis' team is probably better off than Jokic's. So I'm like, okay, Giannis.
Giannis ain't working against what Jokic is working against.
It's true, but I'm glad you have this. I think both the Suns, this is going to be interesting to see who they value more. Chris Paul is the more valuable per se player because he's the engine that makes things run. But we got to start putting more respect on
Devin Booker. That's why they're both up there.
I like this top two. So you know what? I'm not going to say it's great. I'm going to say it's all right. This is Stephen A's. This is Stephen A's list. It's not Chanae's list.
Hold on.
The better list would be Chanae's list.
Do you want to do a list next time we come
up? Here's what you agree with my top two.
Hold on. Yeah.
And you agree with the respect. Okay. The only thing you challenged is number four.
I know.
That's better than
I.
We got to go to break.
I know Steph's been
Chanae's got you covered. I just have to say one thing. My grandmother called. She liked your Elvis reference, and you did it multiple times.
Hold on. Let me ask you a question.
It's 2022.
Did grandma say the suit was fly? Did she say that?
Y'all are coordinated, though.
She just liked your Elvis references. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Yesterday, Blazers head coach Chauncey Billups was asked his reaction to what's been going on with Brian Flores in the NFL. And this is what he had to say. I think we're light years ahead of where any other league is. I'm really proud of it, and I think a lot of it has to do with our players and our union. They've been pretty aggressive about what needs to happen. Thank you, Dave McMenamin, for that. Stephen A., is the NBA light years ahead of other leagues in minority hiring?
Without question. I mean, I don't think there's any denying that. The NBA has been relatively proactive in that regard. I'd still like to see some improvements in ownership, to see somebody other than Michael Jordan have a majority stake as an African-American in a position of ownership, considering that the league is more than 70% black and you see people coming into the mix. And I'd love it when LeBron James retired his aspiration to own a basketball team. One of the reasons that I've been critical at times about LeBron James is when I think he says things that alienate him from that group. Because remember, they have to let you in. They don't have to, or they could choose not to. You don't have, just because you have the money doesn't mean you can just own an NBA team. They have to let you, and the Board of Governors has to agree to that. And so if you're LeBron James and you want to do this in the future, you might want to take those things into consideration. But he's a great role model and a great player and somebody like him and a few others taking an ownership stake, Dwayne Wade, hopefully elevating his ownership stake within the Utah Jazz organization in years to come, along with others, I hope it's something that we see more of. But that's my only issue right now as it pertains to the NBA. I think in every other way, they're definitely light years ahead of everybody else.
All right. It was a great show. We had Damian Woody, Vegas Dan, Chennai in the building. Mr. Stephen A. himself. Should we do it again tomorrow?
I'll think about it.
Yes.
I'll think about it.